It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. What can we learn about the personal finance from the spending and saving habits of others? Our guest, Lindsay Stanbury, shares insight from her new book, Refinery 29, Money Diaries, Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Your Finances and Everyone Else's, along with practical personal financial tips and covering everything from tackling staggering amounts of student debt to talking about important financial questions with your significant other. Lindsay, good morning and welcome to The Morning Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us about this concept of the money diary and why you say it really struck a nerve with people.
Yeah, so Money Diaries is a daily financial column that we publish on Refinery 29. And in it, millennial women, typically millennial women, track their spending for a week. But they also share details like their salaries, their rent, how much they're investing in their 401k. And it is super fascinating in the fact that it's actually often very mundane. They talk about what they buy at the grocery store, but then we also find that they're sharing information about their relationships, their careers, their, how they, choose to spend their money.
So what do we gain by learning about other people's financial habits?
Well, I think that there's, a fun voyeuristic element to it. It's like peeking in someone's purse and seeing their receipts. But it's also an opportunity to kind of get a gut check of how you're doing. You can look at people in similar careers with similar salaries and see how they're doing it. But then you also kind of get an idea of what it's like to live in a different part of the country or the world, to have a different kind of career, to have different, values. So I think that it really runs the gamut of what you can get out of it.
Well, yeah, the kind of peeping Tom aspect of it is really quite striking. When you start looking at some of these things and you see what people are doing, it's really interesting stuff. And I think a lot of people can say, I'm kind of there. And so there's probably some solidarity there. The financial advice in your book could work for anyone. Still, you're writing specifically for women here. Why is that?
Yeah, when I started writing about personal finance, it was something that I kind of fell into in a way. I was a really good saver, but when I started looking around for more information about, how should I really be investing in my 401k, why should I get into the stock market, I wasn't excited about the advice that I was finding. The advice for women tended to be very oversimplified. There was a lot of dieting metaphors, which drove me crazy. There was a lot of advice not to buy a latte. And I really hated that it was so gendered. Or on the other side, it was, very aggressive. It was very, a lot of sports metaphors. And I didn't find myself in the advice. So I had the great privilege of working at Refinery and saying, hey, we should talk to women about money differently. And so I started doing that. The book is all female financial advisors because I feel like women talk to women about money a little bit differently, and it kind of takes away some of that like pressure and guilt that I think a lot of women feel when it comes to their finances.
It's easy to look at somebody else's financial habits and cast judgment. Is that something you hear from your readers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, money is still a taboo topic. It's more likely that you'll have a conversation about the intimate details of your relationship with your friends before you ever tell them what your salary is or if you carry credit card debt. And I think that's because people feel embarrassed about it or like they are not keeping up or maybe they make too much and they don't want to share that information too.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, we'll talk about a million other things before we talk about money, and it isn't polite to ask people about it. There are all sorts of cultural taboos that go back, a long time. This isn't some new thing, but it's fascinating that that's such a sensitive topic. Sometimes I think we'd rather talk about sex.
Oh, absolutely would rather talk about sex. I think that these days there's less judgment about it. And, we interviewed a young woman earlier this year who was saying she didn't want to tell anyone her salary because she didn't want people judging how she chose to spend her money, either thinking that she couldn't afford to buy something or thinking she was being cheap if she didn't buy something. So it's a funny thing, you know, these judgments that we carry. And we definitely see that, you know, our readers are judgmental, but I also think that that's okay, too. I think it's an outlet for people to express these kind of the anxiety that they have around money.
Okay. Well, we'll get into some more specific areas later in the program. And when we come back, we'll talk about the big financial concerns, Lindsay, that you hear over and over from people these days. Lindsay Stansberry is the Work and Money Director at Refinery 29. Have you ever kept a money diary, and what did you learn from it? We continue this conversation ahead. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're talking about personal finance today with Lindsay Stansberry, the Work and Money Director at Refinery 29. She has a new book out titled Refinery 29 Money Diaries, Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Your Finances and Everyone Else's. Have you ever kept a money diary? What did you learn from it? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Lindsay, we'll get into more specific areas of personal finance later in the program, but broadly, what are the big financial concerns you hear over and over from people these days?
I think it's probably not surprising. There's a lot of concern about student loan debt and, you know, an eagerness to pay that off as quickly as possible. We see some credit card debt, you know, and then just the big question of, like, how do you afford the life that you want? You know, there's a lot of media coverage saying that millennials aren't buying homes. We're not really seeing that with money diaries. It's a really nice mix, but they definitely are, you know, spending more money on experience than, say, like a new pair of shoes or a sofa.
Let's take a few minutes and talk about budgets, because you're not a big fan of budgets, unlike a lot of financial advisors. Budgets aren't what they're cracked up to be. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that it goes back to the earlier conversation that we were having about that I wasn't happy with the personal finance advice that I was finding. You know, oftentimes budgets are compared to dieting. They can be very restrictive. They can make you feel really bad about yourself. And I think that, you know, oftentimes saying I'm going to spend $100 on food this month and $50 on entertainment, and then something comes up and you go over, you end up feeling really guilty, and it doesn't really help you manage your money. It just creates a lot of boundaries and a lot of restrictions, and you end up feeling like you're making sacrifices. So what we encourage you to do is, you know, actually keep a money diary. It can be a great tool. You don't have to publish it on Refinery. And it just gives you a sense of, you know, how much money you're bringing in every month and how much is going out. And it helps you kind of rethink your finances overall. It's about being more mindful and not saying, you know, my coffee budget is $50, and if I spend $55, then I'm a failure.
Tell us about the highlighter test.
Yeah, the highlighter test is a great concept that was developed by this fantastic financial planner, Manisha Thakur. It's part of a three-part thing that she recommends, what she calls joy-based spending. And the highlighter test is the first step. And what you do is you take about a month's worth of spending. That includes your rent or your mortgage, your car payment, your electricity bill, but then also like that Starbucks run, your yoga membership, whatever. And you go through and you highlight anything that doesn't bring you joy. So, you know, maybe it's your phone bill. And with something like that, maybe you can take some time to call your phone company and try to get a better rate. But we're also thinking about things like that dinner you had with some friends that you don't actually really like very much. And they always choose that really expensive restaurant where you end up feeling like that was money that you could have spent in some better way. Or maybe it's the yoga class that you always go to, and even though you have a yoga mat, you never bring it, so you spend a dollar every single time you go. You know, those little things can really add up over time.
We hear a lot of numbers being thrown around, things like 30% of your budget should go to housing, 20% should go to future expenses, so forth. It seems like everyone's got a basic go-to model for how money should be divided up. Lindsay, what's yours?
Yeah, one of the ones that we recommend in the book, comes from her financial advisor, Priya Milani, where she does what she calls reverse budgeting. So 80% goes to living life and 20% goes to future expenses. And it's really important to focus on that 20%, right? I think that it's so easy for people to forget about that. But 10% of that should be going to a retirement fund. And then the other 10% should be going to, you know, whatever goals you have for the future. We really encourage goal-based savings. I think that having a want attached to your savings plan makes things, it makes it more fun. It makes it feel more worthwhile. So that want might be a house. It might also be a trip. It might be starting your own business. But really coming up with those goals and making clear plans can be really exciting.
Lindsay Stanberry is the Work and Money Director at Refinery 29. Her new book is titled Refinery 29 Money Diaries, Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Your Finances and Everyone Else's. When we, as we continue here in our discussion, one of the things I'd like to know, and I'm sure our audience would as well, what money and budgeting mistakes do you see a lot of young people making? We'll talk about that and some other things in a little bit. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. How open and honest are you when it comes to talking about money? And how do you think we can have better conversations about financial matters? 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're talking about personal finance this hour with Lindsay Stanberry, the Work and Money Director at Refinery 29. Her new book, Refinery 29 Money Diaries, Everything You've Ever Wanted to Know About Your Finances and Everyone Else's. Lindsay, what money and budgeting mistakes do you see a lot of young people making?
You know, I think that one of the big things that I see is they just ignore their money. You know, they have their paycheck coming in and they are maybe saving a little bit in their 401ks and for the future, but they don't really take the time to really understand their finances because they think it's hard or they think it's boring or, you know, whatever reason or excuse they come up with. And it is easy to ignore it in your 20s and, you know, suddenly have a realization as you hit your 30s and begin to have kids and start really planning for your future that you've wasted some time. And I hope with this book that people realize that it isn't boring and it can be exciting and it isn't hard either. It just does take some time.
Well, let's talk about how we can have more honest conversations about money. We've already mentioned, you know, money is kind of a taboo topic, and it's difficult. It's a difficult conversation to have. But what are some things we can do to make our money conversations more honest and even just make them possible? How do we start?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you have to be the one to start it. You have to be the one who's vulnerable. You can't go in with your friends or your partner, you know, just firing questions. You have to be willing to share. And I think that we also have to remember that it doesn't necessarily have to be super specific. Like, I understand the kind of anxiety over sharing things like how much is in your savings account or what salary you're bringing home. But, you know, there are other more basic, important conversations that you can be having, like, how much you are investing in your 401k? Are you investing in your 401k? You know, how are you making tweaks in your spending habits so that you can save for a trip? You know, where are you making sacrifices so that you can afford a new sofa? I think that those little things can really begin to, like, warm you up to talking more and more about money.
You write that this kind of conversation is harder for women than for men. Why is that?
You know, we're only just now, you know, having more and more control over our money. You know, it was only in the 70s that we started getting credit cards, that we have careers, that we are going to college in greater numbers than men. We are, in the past old white men have always dominated these financial conversations. We're just now finding our voice. So I think that that's intimidating when you get an opportunity to do things for the first time, to really be thinking about money and, you know, the power of your spending, your savings. It's intimidating. So I think that that's one of the biggest reasons.
So when is the right time to talk about finances with a significant other?
Yeah, I think that we offer in the book 20 questions that you can ask your partner, and they really run the gamut from that first date when you discuss who's going to pick up the bill. There's a lot of anxiety and conversations, especially around heterosexual couples of, you know, who pays on the first date, the man or the woman. We explore that in the book. I would argue that, you know, that you should talk about it on the first date and don't make it awkward. And, you know, establish from the very beginning that, you know, you are equals and you're going to talk about these things.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I thought you were done and I was interrupting you. So finish your thought, please.
I was going to say, I think that, you know, as you go further and further into your relationship and you become more serious, you're also going to be thinking about, like, when do you bring up how much student loan debt you have? When do you talk about how you like to save money? My husband is incredibly frugal. I tend to spend more than he does. And, you know, navigating that can be tricky at times.
Lindsay Stanbury is the author of Refinery 29 Money Diaries. One question, Lindsay, that newly married couples struggle with is whether or not to combine bank accounts. There's probably no one-size-fits-all approach to this question, but how do you recommend couples handle this one?
Yeah, I think this is really fascinating, and it's a trend that we've seen stand out in Money Diaries, where more and more women are keeping separate accounts from their partners. One thing that we talk about in the book is doing the mine, yours, ours method, which is you keep an account, your partner keeps an account, and then you have a joint account where you pool money for shared expenses, your rent, your cable bill, whatever. I think it really is up to couples to discuss things and figure out how to make that work. I've seen that to be a really awesome system. I've also seen couples have fights over things like dining room chairs. You know, is that a shared expense? Or if the wife wants it and the husband doesn't, does that mean it should be coming out of her bank account?
You have stories in the book about husbands and wives sending each other money electronically via Venmo, essentially the 21st century version of going Dutch. Were you surprised to learn how married couples these days approach this topic?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that we see married couples, you know, Venmoing each other for as amounts as small as, you know, the monthly Netflix bill. It's not what I would do personally. It seems like it takes up a lot of time. And, you know, should you end up in divorce court that you were splitting the Netflix bill so specifically is not really going to help you, which is a depressing thing to think about, but true. So, you know, I think that that's one of those things, you know, raises questions of how technology has changed the way that we share our finances and, you know, have we lost kind of that, you know, I owe you this, you owe me that, I'll grab this, you know, method that I think many of us were more used to.
So even if you and your significant other feel good about the financial goals you've set, how important is it to check in on those every now and then? And how often should you do that?
Yeah, I think it's great to check in on them, you know, regularly. One of the financial advisors I worked with was saying quarterly, that you sit down and you have a formal conversation. I'm not so sure that my husband and I are so specific as that, but, you know, we are always talking about it. And I think that, you know, when you come up on things like a career change or having a kid or thinking about moving, these are especially important times to check in. And we found that, you know, there's research that suggests that couples don't even know, most people don't even know what their spouse makes. And I think that that's like, you know, the most basic, like you should really know how much your partner is bringing in.
Did you ever find that couples changed the way they felt about doing things like splitting the bill after they got married?
Yes, sometimes, but not. Like, it's funny, I think that those kind of things that you establish early in your relationship tend to exist throughout your relationship. So I think that we find that couples are really putting these separate finances into place very early on and then maintaining it. And even after they, you know, have more and more shared expenses, like children, they are still maintaining these very separate financial lives.
What about talking with an adult parent? What are some questions people should be asking there?
Yeah, I thought that this was such an important thing to talk about in the book because I hadn't really seen it anywhere before. But millennials, our parents are moving into retirement age, and you know, a lot of our parents still support us in many ways. It can be as simple as they're paying for our phone bill, but sometimes it's even more significant than that. So I really wanted to encourage young women to start talking to their parents about their own retirement plans and, you know, what are you going to do with your house, and, you know, really in-depth things like, do you have power of attorney? You know, do you have a living will? Do you have plans for your funeral? And it can be really depressing, but the alternative is that if something really bad happens, if your parent gets sick, these things come up and you lose time, you lose the ability to spend time with that parent because you're with a lawyer or a financial planner worrying about how you're going to pay the bills.
Well, and even if you do have those conversations, things can go wrong. And so, you know, you do need to spend some time on those unpleasant details. And I'm old enough, both my parents are gone, but I'm old enough to have gone through that twice. And I'll just say a benefit of 20/20 hindsight, there's probably a lot of things I wish I had done differently about that. So I think that's a really key point. Talk to your parents about those things. What about children? I mean, do people grapple with how much they need to be putting away for college expenses?
Yeah, it's funny. A couple of years ago, we were doing a focus group at Refinery, and a young woman said, you know, it's not like you can save to have a baby. And we were all a little shocked and a little concerned because you can, in fact, save to have a baby. But it's scary, right, because we're paying down so many student loan debt ourselves. The idea of saving on top of that for our kids' education is really intimidating, I think. And I imagine that a lot of people, I feel like this, we just finished paying off my husband's student loan debt. We have a 2-year-old, so we're saving for his college, and it's like, well, that money just went from one pot to the other pot of
it's
paying
like,
for education.
Money's like closet space. You always fill it up.
We're
really kind of out of time here, but give us one practical money tip we can put into practice today.
You know, I think a really simple thing that Priya, the financial advisor that I work with a lot, recommends is having a high-yield savings account, especially because interest rates are probably going to go up again. It's such an easy way to have your savings work a little bit more for you.
Okay, stop paying checking fees. We get it.
Yes.
Lindsay Stanberry is the Work and Money Director at Refinery 29. Her new book is Refinery 29 Money Diaries, everything you've ever wanted to know about your finances and everyone else's. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.